where you have to begin is with the language, and making the language work in circumstance and character and compel the audience to listen. And the only way you can do that is to know what you're saying and why you're saying it and how you want it to be said.
Hello and welcome to The State of Shakespeare. I'm Garrett Vandermeer.
And I'm Jim Elliott.
And today on the program we have James Newcomb. James Newcomb appeared for 14 seasons with the Oregon Shakespeare Festivals, 7 seasons with the Denver Center Theater Company, 4 seasons with Shakespeare Santa Cruz, 3 seasons with the Utah Shakespearean Festival, and other regional credits include productions at the Goodman Theater, Chicago Shakespeare Theater, South Coast Repertory, Berkeley Repertory, Geneva Theater Center, Portland Center Stage, the Old Globe. And Mr. Newcomb is a founding member of Shakespeare and Company and an adjunct professor in the University of California, San Diego Department of Theater and Dance. James Newcomb, thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks, sir. Thanks. It was great to be here.
That's quite a bio. You've worked extensively and for a long time in some of the top Shakespearean repertory companies in the country.
Yeah, you know, your career kind of chooses you sometimes in this business. I can tell you I didn't set out to become a Shakespearean actor. I mean, in some circles, I suppose an American Shakespearean actor is an oxymoron. But, you know, I found myself at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and I fell in love with Shakespeare and also at Shakespeare and Company, which is where I first fell in love with Shakespeare. And I found myself working almost exclusively in Shakespeare with the occasional venture into something non-Shakespearean.
What a beautiful career.
Yeah, I feel very blessed. I feel very fortunate. And, you know, it's an interesting process because even though I had some training, you know, and I had some classical training, particularly structure verse and vocal training and Shakespeare and Company, you know, Shakespeare is an acquired ability, acquired craft that comes from years of doing, of practice. And it's ongoing, you know. I can't remember, there's a playwright named Don Nigro that says Shakespeare's like peeling an onion. You never get to the center. And it only makes you cry. Well, not completely true, but it's always revealing itself. And the search is always going on to find a way of revealing it to yourself and making it resonate for an audience. And just the challenge of the largesse and the breadth of the language, of the circumstance, of character, I find exhilarating every time I work on a Shakespeare piece.
Jamie, I want to ask, you have an incredible wealth of experience in performing Shakespeare, and you're also a teacher. How do you begin to teach Shakespeare? What can you and can you not teach? And where do you start?
Oh, boy. Yeah. That is a big question, Hammond. You know, there's the technical aspects of teaching, you know, rhetoric and, you know, the structure of verse and rhythm and the musicality. But there's, you know, one of the things that I find problematical today with actors, as I've said prior, you know, Shakespeare requires a kind of breadth and largesse that is kind of counter to the sensibilities and the behavior of society present day. And so
how do you counter that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, there's, you know, you hope that actors have a poetic sensibility, you know, and a poetic core to the reason why they want to communicate. A lot of, you know, our media influences and has been influencing our acting style, you know, since the 50s. Stella Adler Actors Studio, more behavioral film style, you know, small for the camera, which doesn't really work for Shakespeare. Shakespeare requires a theatricality, you know, and a kind of artifice, if you will, that actually makes it more authentic when it's performed on stage. And, you know, to use the language and have the language work on them physically, the physicality that's required, the energy that's required for that language, you know, is unusual. It doesn't come easily to, I think, younger actors today.
Well, you said a mouthful.
I hope that makes sense.
It absolutely makes sense, Jamie. I mean, there's so many thoughts I had about various training problems that we encounter as teachers of acting. But one of the most recent ones for me was this thought process in certain students that says, why do I have to learn the lines? Why can't I just say it my way?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a whole movement now happening to adapt Shakespeare to modern language. you know, I can't wrap my head around the point. You know, if you, what was it? There was a story about Paul Scofield when he came out of the theater. He was Peter Brook's leader. And he was walking out of the theater after a dress rehearsal or something and with another actor, and he looked up at the marquee, and it said, King Lear, directed by Peter Brook, written by William Shakespeare. And, you know, Peter Brook had above the title of Shakespeare, and Scofield turned to the other actor and said, the world as we know it no longer exists. We knew it, you know, and to a degree, you know, I get concerned because why do Shakespeare if you're just going to rewrite it or if you're going to paraphrase it? You know, and I've heard that too from other actors. Well, why don't I just make that sound more like, you know, I talk? And even to the extent that there is a movement, you know, in some places where the stress and honoring the structure of the verse, you know, to go completely against the stress simply because it sounds more like we talk. But if you do that with the structure of how Shakespeare's written, it will be, it's unintelligible.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like codifying and making it okay to do it badly.
Which you can do without trying to do that.
That's right. That's exactly right. Just because you can play the blues on the piano doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you can interpret Mozart.
Right.
Well, Jamie, are you in a sense then championing an obsolete aesthetic?
Buddy, I don't know. You know, I'm of an age and I've been doing it for a long time. And I don't know. I know what it sounds like when it works. You know, there's nothing like it when it's done well, when the language is done well, because the basis of it, it's not about reinterpreting with some clever conceit, because where you have to begin is with the language.
Yeah, I will say that both Garrett and I had the opportunity to see Mark Rylance's 12th Night this season on Broadway.
Yeah.
And boy, is that crystal clear. And the good news is that it's made back its investment and it is one of the biggest hits on Broadway of the season. So I'm not sure we're dying yet, but it has to be done quite well in order for it to resonate with the modern day audience, I think.
Jamie, what are you working on now? What's your next project? What are you thinking about these days?
I start rehearsals on the 25th of March at Chicago Shakespeare for Henry V. And I'm playing Fluellen, which is the character that I've wanted to play since I saw at the Delacorte Kevin Kline play Henry. So I'm thrilled to be doing that. And it opens middle of April and plays almost to the end of June.
Nice.
Now, Fluellen is one of the more interesting characters in Henry V, but what are you thinking about as you begin working on it and cogitating about the character?
Well, I've been doing some studying about Wales and working on the dialect, which is a very specific dialect. And interesting enough, in context of what we've been talking about, it's a muscular dialect, you know, and there isn't a syllable or consonant that's lost. Even with, you know, they come to a full stop on every consonant, and it's just rich. They were the first Britons that migrated from the south into the island of England and then were forced by the Romans to the west. You know, they're miners and it's a craggy, you know, mountainous area and seafarer, they're party people, you know, and they don't suffer, you know, I'm generalizing about all Welsh, but Fluellen particularly does not suffer fools easily, and he's, I think, at their core, and I think it's sort of appropriately so in a play that is, could be argued, is so pro-war, but also very aware of the cost of war, what it means to go to war in terms of human cost, you know, and emotional cost, and the glory of it, of a good fight.
And the rules involved, too, though.
But also that it's not cheap, and Fluellen, you know, believes in the disciplines of war. You know, that they need to be honored. I think he's a very pragmatic man and loyal.
I wonder what Fluellen would make of drone warfare.
Yeah.
Drone warfare. No, no, not according to the discipline of the war. Not at all.
Maybe this is a reach in terms of drawing a parallel, but certainly to go back to our earlier conversation, working on Shakespeare requires a discipline that is almost unheard of these days in terms of your work on the text and your work on your voice and your work on your body. And the more successful Shakespeare actors, I think, are really committed to the discipline, like Fluellen is to the discipline of war.
Oh, that's very well put. You see pictures of Olivier, you know, and I mean, he was always in the gym, you know. I mean, it requires energy you know, and physical energy, you know, you just have to stay in shape if you're going to do this kind of work.
Now, when you started, Jamie, you had the opportunity, or maybe you took advantage of the opportunity, or circumstances arose to allow you to really immerse yourself in a process of coming to terms with the work and the language and how to approach it. If you were starting over today and were to deliberately attempt to recreate that, how would you do that? Would it be possible in today to begin to approach that in terms of training?
Well, yeah, you know, I do. And I think you have to begin with the language. I know that as I was a younger actor, I approached everything emotionally. I would look for the emotional circumstances of character, and that would identify how I played it. And so what you would see is a wash, and what you often see with younger actors is kind of generalized wash of emotion, you know, without using language. And that's not necessarily exclusively to Shakespeare, it's everything. You kind of have an emotional take on it, and it's about emoting.
Right.
You want people to see how you feel about what's going on, you know, and you want them to feel your feeling, you know, without actually using the language to do that. And what I learned over time, and what I would encourage younger actors to do if they're doing, you know, working on Shakespeare, is that, yes, there is an inherent emotional quality to the scene, but that there's more nuance than that, and look and see where the language is leading you. Because the language has got to lead you to where that nuance is and why those words are put together, and in Shakespeare particularly, why those sounds, those consonants and those vowels are put together in that way in order to express as much depth and texture to the emotional circumstances as you can, and to use that language. I mean, I spend hours in the bathtub, which is my favorite place to work.
Good resonance there.
Just looking at the text. For some reason, when I get my temperature up, I tend to get more ideas about how to use the language in order to exploit the circumstances. Because what you want to do with a role, and particularly with a Shakespeare role, is to exploit it. To find something that, you know, you can not only personalize with, but just moment to moment, and as many moments as you can find to surprise yourself as you behave inside of the scene, you know, using that language, you know, rhythmically, playing with the music of it, playing with cadence, playing with, you know, physicality, so that you don't just settle on the first choice, first impulse, but try and find as many new impulses as you can, you know, and let that inform you and liberate you. But you can't find it the first day of rehearsal. You know, you can't go into rehearsal and start looking at the text. You need to know that text really well before you ever begin. You have to spend time with the text so that once you get to the point where you're getting it up on its feet, you can play.
I mean, we talk about the actor, you know, has an instrument, and the instrument is the actor himself. And the description you just gave is an actor playing his instrument and fiddling, so to speak. It's just fantastic. What a great description.
Yeah, I mean, that's the joy. That's the fun of it, is when you can get out there. You know, I mean, it's also contingent on, you know, collaboration with the other actors you're working with and their processes and the process of a director and how that director works, you know, and that's always, those are unknowns, and, you know, you hope that you're all on the same page together, and sometimes you are and sometimes you aren't, you know, and there's the rub. But, you know, when you are and you're in a scene with somebody and you can really play, you know, knowing that you trust the language, knowing that you know what you're saying and why you're saying it, how you want to say it, and can react off of what you're being given and what you're giving is being reacted to, boy, there's just nothing like it.
James Newcomb, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thanks, Garrett. Thanks, Jim. It's been really a pleasure.
James Newcomb will be appearing in Henry V for our listeners in the Chicago area at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Henry V runs April 29th to June 15th, 2014. Thank you, Jamie.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thank you very much. And go Shakespeare.
Yay, go Shakespeare.
I'm Garrett Vandermeer.
And I'm Jim Elliott.
And this is The State of Shakespeare.
Thanks for joining us for the State of Shakespeare podcast. We invite you to visit stateofshakespeare.com for more episodes, information about each of our guests, and the Shakespeare text you heard on the program, and much more. And we welcome you to join the discussion by liking us on Facebook. That's www.stateofshakespeare.com. Thanks for listening.